This is Passport to Everywhere, an incredible worldwide journey as your host, Melissa Biggs Bradley, transports you to dream destinations, introduces you to extraordinary guests from all over the world, showcases the current state of travel, shares valuable insights, takes you behind the scenes at some of the most iconic hotels, and explores the future of travel. This is your Passport to Everywhere.
Milan is Italy's fashion capital, and arguably the world's fashion capital. But its charms are not as obvious as those of its sister cities like Venice or Florence. Today I'm excited to speak with the American designer J.J. Martin, who's been based in Milan for over 21 years. J.J. began her fashion career working in marketing at Calvin Klein before moving to Milan, where she worked as a freelance fashion journalist, writing for Harper's Bazaar, WSJ, and Wallpaper magazine for many years. Now she's the founder and creative director of the vibrant, maximalist fashion brand La Double J. What began as an online magazine selling vintage clothing has morphed into a full-fledged fashion house selling JJ's own pattern-forward, eccentric designs and homeware in her store in Milan and online. There's no doubt that JJ is a woman who knows a thing or two about fashion. But she's also proved apt at shaking things up and taking risks. She's a sharp and very honest observer of Italian culture, a believer in spreading joy and in continually seeking a higher path. Coming up on Passport to Everywhere, I'll be speaking with fashion designer and entrepreneur J.J. Martin. And stay tuned for this week's Destination Hacks on Milan.
Share the show. Find more episodes of Passport to Everywhere with Melissa Biggs Bradley. Streaming now on all podcast platforms. The journey continues. You're listening to Passport to Everywhere with Melissa Biggs Bradley.
This week I'm in Milan on one of our Vogue Insider Journeys. If you're interested in what we do on these trips, you can get a peek on my Instagram at Indigari Founder. I just love this city, and I couldn't think of a better person to do a deep dive on Milan with than J.J. Martin.
And I'm thrilled today to have her on the show to talk about fashion and life as an expat and an entrepreneur in Milan, and to give us the keys to the city. Let's start, honestly, with your journey. Tell us about what drew you to fashion and eventually how you got to Milan and how those things are interconnected, because Milan is the capital of fashion for Italy.
It sure is. It's a global fashion capital. I'm very lucky to be living here. I never could have imagined in a million years growing up in Pacific Palisades, California, with my hunting, camping, fishing family, that I would ever be living in Milan and working in the fashion industry. I did not have any real fashion role models growing up. I saw some of my friends' moms who were very glamorous and elegant in their sort of Vidal Sassoon hair and Gloria Vanderbilt jeans, but it was something that always attracted me. I mean, I'll never forget when I was in the seventh grade and Elle magazine came out for the first time and my friend's mother had a subscription to it and she was telling us about Gianni Versace. And I was like, I can't believe your mom knows all this. It was like so exciting to me. Fashion felt very far away, like something that was never really attainable. And so after college, I went to UC Berkeley. When I moved to San Francisco, I was always attracted to fashion, but didn't have a clue as to how to get to New York, how to work in magazines. I had no clue. So what I did was just get into like the industry that felt the closest to it, which was creatively inspiring, which was the advertising world, which was quite big in San Francisco. So I started working at a really fun boutique agency there and was surrounded by creative people, and then ended up moving to New York to get a job at another agency. And that agency got Tommy Hilfiger as a client. And I was over the moon, begging to be on the account team, got to be on the account team. After a while, I was actually applied for a job at Calvin Klein in the marketing department, and I got the job. It was amazing. So I spent 2 years at Calvin, and it was a very unexpected environment. It was very rigid and conservative and voiceless. It wasn't what I expected. I was very happy to work there, but let's say I didn't feel free in the creator state. And I was wearing all my vintage clothes that I had discovered at Chelsea Flea Market while living in New York. And that really helped expand my sense of fashion, discovering vintage and being able to access it in New York at such cheap prices. I went every weekend and it was phenomenal. So that was kind of like my early taste into fashion.
And then how did that bring you to Milan, or were they separate?
Well, they were actually separate because I moved to Milan for the biggest cliche reason, which was I met an Italian man and I fell in love. And I quit my job at Calvin, moved to Milan, didn't have a job, and so signed myself up for 6 hour a day Italian lessons so that I could at least get through dinner conversation and start like the chit chat. And that was 21 years ago. So I have been living full-time in Milan for 21 years. And I tried to get a job in marketing when I moved there, but the Italians had never heard of marketing in fashion. None of the companies had it, and they didn't know where to place me. And I had been at such a big company that I wasn't able to even like transfer that information to some of the smaller companies. You know, it's interesting now that I look back on it, these experiences in big companies, sometimes you learn like just a tiny sliver of the full expansiveness. Whereas like when you work at a small company, you learn almost everything because you're called upon to be pulled in so many different directions. So as luck would have it, I was at a fashion presentation and I met a journalist there who was running Fashion Wire Daily, which was the world's first online fashion news website. And he hired me as a stringer reporter. That experience changed everything for me. We were sort of on the frontier of breaking news because we were publishing before anyone else. And so no one was really reading what I was writing except for Susie Menkes. And she liked what I was writing. And so she asked me to write for her. So I literally went from like the world's most anonymous job to one that had kind of a high profile in the course of a year and a half. So that was really exciting. And then from there, I went on staff at Harper's Bazaar. And then I was on staff at Wallpaper Magazine for many years and WSJ. And I freelanced for many people. And that's how like the Italy as a culture and as an incredible community of people all came to me through my job as a journalist, because it was my work to really uncover it and discover it and shine the light on these incredible Italians. It was a real pleasure.
And I actually always think that so often it's the outsider, the expat, but then also as a trained observer, as a journalist, who ends up having, in some ways, the most interesting perspective on the culture itself. Because if you're too close to it, you don't really understand how special it is. But you are in that privileged position of living in it, but also observing it and also being an outsider. So how would you describe, if you could sum it up, Italian lifestyle being different from an American lifestyle? What are some of the most important elements of that culture?
So this whole idea of La Dolce Vita, it's not just a movie and it's not just like a headline. It is truly the way they operate. They are always thinking about how they feel first. And it's beautiful because, you know, I came from a country which is all about what you do and what you think first, or how you judge or how you criticize. And it's a very, very different dynamic. But you're so right that having that outsider perspective allowed me to look at this country and their phenomenal people with such different eyes. And that's what led me to create La Double J, because it started as a e-commerce for selling my vintage collection. But I did it all through the lens of these incredible creative Italian women that I had met that were so fascinating to me. And it was funny because magazines like Vogue Italia or even Italian Elle or, you know, Marie Claire, they weren't really talking about like how amazing their own Italian women were. They were really more interested in the sort of international profiles, et cetera. And I was like, but you've got this incredible house, like these, what I call the sciure, which is like a hilarious word that's very Milanese that describes these like impeccable housewives. And they are nothing like the housewives that we see on American television. These women are so elegant. First of all, they would never be normally photographed or definitely not on a reality show. They dress exquisitely. They have the most impeccable manners. Their closets are like wardrobes from museums. They have the art of entertaining down to a T. And I was really fascinated by this. When I first got here, there were so many things of just like the way these meals came together. It looked so effortless. And yet there was such bounty and beauty all around. I was like, how do they manage this? So that was really the whole idea behind the Legendary Ladies and the School of Shura, which I called on my website. It was literally like, how do we do this, guys? You know, like how to set your table and how to organize things and all their rules. But in reality, I wasn't really covering true housewives because the true Shura don't work. Whereas the women that I was covering for La Double J were all women who worked in the creative field. And that was what was even more amazing, was that these gallery owners and furniture designers and architects and fashion stylists, et cetera, they had full day jobs and impeccable homes and the greatest style and were great hostesses. So it was even more interesting for me to like crack the nut on how all of this was happening.
And in many ways, they, to me, having gotten to know Milan over the years, that is the secret of what makes Milan so special, is that there is this incredible creative energy that is homegrown and that is distinct. Can you talk a little bit about how you see, you know, Milan's often overlooked by people traveling to Italy who think of going to Florence or Rome or Venice. But to me, it's just as fascinating and multi-layered. It's just a little bit harder to grasp.
Milan is the kind of city where you need to know people, because all of the interesting stuff happens behind the closed courtyards, behind the closed doors of the palazzos, the apartments. The Milanese are entertaining at home. They're not going out to like the cool new restaurant or cafe or bar. It's just not the way they do it. I mean, sometimes they would, but if you really are close friends with someone, you bring them to your home. So that's why I think outsiders, tourists never get the real flavor because they don't know people.
Yeah. And when did you know that Milan was home forever for you?
Well, I have to say that, and I'm writing a book on this right now that'll come out next September. That's all about my sort of initiation into Milan and Italy, and then how that sort of set me up for creating my own company. But the first 5 years were brutal. I really had a hard time. And I think anyone has a hard time moving away from their home, right? Any kind of move, whether you're just moving cities, moving states, it's a challenge. Moving countries, even a bigger shock. Moving cultures, that's like triple threat shock. So basically, I was just driven witless by the constant, what felt like mayhem, chaos, the slowness, the backwardness, the bureaucracy, the fact that everything always seemed to be closed right when I wanted to like go to the hardware store or need a light bulb or wanted to go to like the frutti vendolo to get the fruits and vegetables. I was like, why is this guy closed at like 11 a.m. on a Monday? You know, it just felt so random. Nothing felt like I could get anything done. So I was really frustrated. I was really angry for many, many years. And that was like the kind of negative American in me coming out, like really judging, really criticizing what was going on and wanting to change it. The real kind of miracle happened when I just, something switched in my brain where I was like, I need to just accept this. Like, let me just surrender to what's going on here. Maybe there's even something greater happening here. And by the way, there always is. In whatever situation you want to surrender to, by the way, doesn't have to be Italy. There's always some magic happening under the surface. And I really just allowed myself to be kind of taken in the arms of Italy. And okay, you know what? The waiter is going to take 10 times longer than in any other country. Like, let me just like sit back and enjoy my circumstances, the surroundings, the food. I had to change everything. I had to change my rhythms. I had to change my expectations. My anger spell disintegrated about the time that I got married in 2005. And then things really started picking up in the next 5 years. And by like 2010, I mean, it took a decade. I'm not gonna lie. By the time like 2010 rolled around and I was like firmly ensconced also in my wallpaper role, which opened my eyes up to so many incredible, small, creative people that were not advertisers. Because when I worked at Harper's Bazaar, I was literally interviewing big name designers all the time, and it's not reality. So it was very interesting.
Okay. So then going back to how you then started your business, inspired by these incredible Milanese women and their elegance in living and dressing and your love for vintage prints, how did it all come together?
I had been collecting vintage since the Chelsea flea market in 1999, 98, something like that. And then when I moved to Italy, I had become a voracious collector. So my closets were bursting with vintage clothing. Then I stumbled upon this incredible archive of vintage jewelry in Milan. And so I had the product. And then my husband at the time, we're now divorced, he had just started an e-commerce company where he was helping brands online. And he's like, you know, I think you could probably sell some of that vintage jewelry online. I was like, well, if I sell the jewelry, I want the clothes. And if I'm selling it, then I want it to be a magazine. And it, you know, because that's my background. I know how to write. I know how to edit. I know how to style. And so I just kind of whipped together everything that I loved. And that's what Double J was. She was a love child. She was literally everything that I was obsessed with. It wasn't just vintage clothes. It was like brightly patterned, crazy, bonkers, one of a kind, awesome vintage clothes that you could not find anywhere else. It was the best edit. And I told stories about the Italians. And all of this was wrapped up in this crazy package of joy and fun, humor. And the internet really responded, and especially social media. We got a ton of attention. A lot of that has to do with, yes, we were doing something that hadn't been done because no one was showing vintage on real women before on the internet. No one. There wasn't a single e-commerce for vintage that was selling it the way what I was, on women within their homes in beautiful shots and then mixed with new clothes, new accessories. So that was very original. And I think that helps when you launch a new idea. It really needs to be something that isn't out there. But then it was just fueled by my love for this. I mean, I was bonkers over all this.
And okay, so where does Double J come from? I mean, obviously you're JJ.
La Double J. So I am Jennifer Jane. And as a kid, my family sometimes nicknamed me JJ. But then by the time I got to school and there were so many other Jennifers, like all my girlfriends picked up on that. And so I just got to be known as JJ. Then the Milanese refer to women in the third person as la. They were always like, dove la JJ? You know, they would always be talking about me sort of like in the third person as la JJ. And I thought that was so funny. When I was starting the website, I never imagined having my own brand at that point. I just thought it was a website. So I thought it was really funny that it would be called Double J, but then it turned out that the domain wasn't available. So I was like, let's just call it La Double J. There you go.
That's amazing. You then also expanded into tableware and home decor. I am assuming that's just a natural extension of the things that inspired you.
Yeah. I mean, at first it was, as I said, just selling vintage clothing. And then what happened was I couldn't find enough great product to restock quickly enough. And our business model was flawed because you only have one piece. So I started with clothes. I started with one dress that I did in a vintage print that came from a silk archive in Lake Como. And then we reprinted on brand new, beautiful Italian silk. Matches picked it up. Ruth Chapman was like a super early champion. And she was like, JJ, I love it. And she sold us. And she was like, what's next? And I'm like, what do you mean what's next? Like, I never thought, I was not a fashion entrepreneur. I never even thought of having a collection. She was like, sweetie, you have to like give me newness every season. And I was like, oh, okay. So then we started with a skirt. Then we started with a shirt. And then we had a short dress. So we literally, like the first year, I only had like four products. Then the second year, I had like a mini collection of fashion. And that second year, so this was in 2017, that's when I did the tabletop. And really that just came out of, on the side, I was doing a lot of consulting for other brands that looked at Double J and wanted our sort of mood and vibe. And I was doing everything from content creation to curating events for them. And Pomelato asked me to do an event for them using all of our prints as tablecloths and napkins and the decor and pillows. And we did this big thing. And that night, everyone was like, oh my God, you've got to do tabletop. And literally, the tabletop idea was born at that party. And it came out like 4 months later, we had a collection at the Salone. So now we do ski jackets, evening wear, bathing suits. Like, we've got the beach kit, we've got the ski kit, we've got every kind of tabletop you could ever imagine. All of the glassware is made in Murano. All of the porcelain is made in Verona. And all of our table linens are made outside of Milan. So it's like, this is one thing that's been super important to me as we expand and as we become a real, like, ready to wear, we've become a real ready to wear business. We no longer sell vintage. It was just really important to me that I keep the roots in Italy, both as a thank you and an honoring of the birthplace of the brand, but also to support Italians. And secondly, I'm so interested in ways that the word sustainability can be thought of in different contexts. Because sometimes when we think about sustainability, we think just about not polluting rivers and using organic cottons and silks, et cetera. And that is definitely a very important aspect of it. But the other part of it is how the supply chain is handled and how human beings are being treated. And I know for a fact that every single person that makes my garments and homeware has taken an hour lunch, left at 6:30 p.m. and got 6 weeks paid vacation. And a lot of what we're seeing out there in the marketplace is some really scary working environments for human beings. And a lot of it is not truly uncovered. And I think it should be. So it feels really good and clean for me to be making everything in Italy. And it just ties it up in a neat package since it's my adopted home.
And if you had to describe, I mean, I love what you just said about keeping everything in Italy and your reasons for doing so. There's obviously an Italian-ness to every line that you're creating within the brand. I would say color and joy are other themes that are in all of this. How would you describe sort of the universal things that hold La Double J together?
I mean, I think the joy is probably our number one, like, brand nugget, our secret ingredient. Everything is kind of refracted through that lens of joy, whether it's the prints themselves that are screaming, the colors that are dancing, to the content that we produce, the language we use. I mean, we have shorts that are called the Good Butt Shorts, you know? I mean, like, everything has a sense of humor and, like, a playfulness about it, which is so important. This is, like, the motto of the company is raise your vibration. That's what I practice in my spiritual practice. And that's what I try to put to work at the company itself. And then I would say, like, that's a very Italian thing as well. That enjoyment factor, that's the pleasure. And then on top of it is the Italians do have a real exuberance and they love color. So that works with them. And that's very Italian. Although, of course, Italy gave birth to Giorgio Armani, the king of beige. But then I would say that the sort of third puzzle piece is the passion that Italians have. So they do love their vacations and their rest and their meal time. But when they're working, they're totally obsessed and they're obsessed with perfection. And they are a passion. I mean, like, crazy about quality. It's a real pleasure to be able to make our products here and just realize, like, how beautifully everything is made. I mean, we are using factories that make all of the luxury goods across Italy. And our prices are like 30 to 40% less, most of those brands, which was another really important part of what I did at Double J, was to really, like, give a fair product. You know, our margins are much lower. We're not making as much of a profit on each piece as we could if we were one of those big brand names that you all know that I don't need to mention. But it was just our positioning. It was like, you know what, let's do this direct. Like, let's not have 2,000 stores that cost $10 billion to support. And let's try to really create like a different model here. That's not very Italian, actually, to do something like this. And we have so many different ways that our business model is quite unique. And, you know, we're digital first. And also talk about them. Like, Italians aren't great marketers. They make incredible product that no one ever sees. And, you know, that's why you've probably had so much fun discovering Italy, because there's so much that's hidden behind that little crack door or inside that tiny, like, badly decorated restaurant with bad lighting. It's like the best food ever. It's just so funny.
Yeah, it is. Now, you mentioned your spiritual practice.
Yeah.
Do you feel comfortable talking a little bit about sort of how that evolved and what it means to you?
Sure. I mean, it's my favorite topic. I'll talk about it till the cows come home. I grew up like without a spiritual bone in my body. I was like forced to go to Catholic grammar school and like couldn't wait to graduate. So it was really surprising to me that I have become this total dedicated and deeply involved in my spiritual practice. It was forced upon me, actually. I hit rock bottom twice in my life after my dad died at 19 and dealing with infertility throughout my 30s. And the first rock bottom didn't allow for, unfortunately, a spiritual awakening. Instead, they just gave me a bunch of pills. And the second one, again, I was taking the pills, right, to get pregnant. It's so funny how life repeats itself. It's like something happens and you get triggered and then you're going to default for the thing that is supposed to help you. And it just didn't at all. And so I fell into this like super deep depression. And I just knew that those antidepressants didn't work for me. The whole sort of Western medicine program at that time was just not effective. I would say in the last 10 years, things have like really amped up and there's so many more holistic approaches, which is great. But I went totally woo-woo. I was like, I found an energy healer and never expected, but this like changed my life. And actually, after working with an energy healer who was focused on fertility, by the way, I gave birth to the company. So I never gave birth to human babies, but since working with energy and abundance as a energetic principle, I'm living a fertile lifestyle, totally. And I'm giving birth to projects left and right, homes, dinner parties, books, everything. It was so interesting. And then since then, I've been just a real seeker and curious. And I open one door in myself and 40 other ones open, and I want to dig deeper. And so I'm always on this like quest to sort of experiment and expand. And that it's taken me in the craziest places, Sedona, Arizona, with the sort of multidimensional people. It's taken me to Egypt, studying the ancient Egyptian mystery school. I'm now working with a woman from what's called the Divine University on a 6-month coaching project. I've been with shamans all summer long. I don't have like one practice, but I am deeply dedicated to the practice of what I call ascension, which is basically raising your consciousness as a human being on planet Earth. And I practice every morning, no matter where I am, I do something, whether it's 5 minutes, 55 minutes, it doesn't matter. There's some sort of spiritual connection happening every day for me.
That's so beautifully said. We could go down that rabbit hole together. I've been to some of the same places you have looking for exactly the same thing. And I completely agree with you that there is a higher frequency on which we can live if we accept that seeking in our lives.
And by the way, not only accepting the seeking, but also accepting the blocks that come your way and the pain and the trauma and the suffering, because those are actually doorways for your spiritual growth. And most people don't see it that way. They go right into victim consciousness and they want to blame everyone, or they sink into like inaction and passiveness, which is very different from working through the pain that is arising. And pain is honestly one of the greatest spiritual teachers you will ever have. You just can't ignore it.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I'm sure you've probably read Elizabeth Lesser's book, Broken Open, but that's a great example of exactly what you're talking about, that using the hard things in life to bring you to a brighter level of existence.
I did not read that book, but I completely agree with her. And I lived it firsthand. And this is what's so important. We're talking about like fashion. Now we're talking about this and like whoever's listening to it. It's like all of us just need to wake up to that fact, all of us. And I don't care how they figure it out, whether it's on this podcast or, you know, Elizabeth Lesser's book, or they're reading Bruce Lipton, or they're following Dr. Joe Dispenza, or they're with their shaman. We as human beings, all the billions of us, we need to wake up. We all need to wake up, and we need to help each other wake up. And we do this with kindness. We do not do this with the incessant punishment and criticism and judgment that's going on around town. We just can't. We can't do it that way. Even if you see something that you don't like, or people, you know, whether it's wars, presidents, viruses, anything you don't like, if you act in a hysterical way as a result of that, you have then lowered your own vibration. You are out of consciousness. It is so important that people understand this. And I'll get on my soapbox. I'm getting on my soapbox here. I can't help it. It just comes through me that it's just so freaking fundamental that we start changing our mindsets on this.
Anyway. Yep. And it is mindset. So I would love to now dig into Milan and how we can help people experience the joy of that city. When you have friends who come to Milan for the first time, what do you advise them to do with their time?
Walk to the top of the Duomo. I love that. Not a lot of people do that. It's a really good thing to do. I just love walking up those stairs and getting up there and getting the views. Every Duomo in Italy is spectacular, but I think Milan's is one of the all-time best. The lines are ridiculous. I highly recommend going super early or late. I love home museums in Milan. So you don't know anyone in Milan? Great. Go to some museums that were formerly homes and you're going to get an idea of this. Obviously, Villa Necchi is probably one of the best known ones, but I love Pezzoli Poldi. I might have even botched that name. I love the one that is right across from the Four Seasons that's above the restaurant Il Salumaio, Baguta Valsecchi. Again, I always botch the names on these. Anyway, they're fantastic. I love the home museums. You know, there's not a lot of contemporary art, but I think the Prada Foundation has done an amazing job. So if you're into that, you should go visit that. And if Milan is a real furniture town, so if you can get here during the Salone del Mobile, you will have the time of your life. I suggest booking your hotel 2 years in advance because it's like crazy town, or booking an Airbnb. The Niloufar with, and the De Mori studio, all of these really, really talented either design curators or furniture and architect designers are just spectacular in this city. And Milan is really a city for those that appreciate design, because you've got all of the post-war incredible 1950s and 60s apartment buildings that look like nothing from the outside, and then have the most incredible entryways and all of the woodwork and the marble intarsias on the floors. And then you've got all of the fascist architecture as well, which is, I never paid attention to until I started working for wallpaper, and it was my job to like get on top of this stuff. And suddenly I like walked into the train station in Milan. I was like, this place is spectacular. Like your eyes just get open. It's good to sort of research the design history of Milan before you come. I mean, buildings like the Torre Velasca are just spectacular.
Going during Salone, you mentioned De Mori Studio and Niloufar, that they have exhibits during that experience. I've been lucky to go a couple of times. And it is, to me, it's like a giant block party that takes over the city of fashion and design, and you have ways to go in and see things that you wouldn't the rest of the year, because they're putting on special shows.
Absolutely. And this is in April, early April every year. This last year it was postponed because of COVID, but it's usually in April. It's an amazing time. I would not recommend ever coming to Milan in July or August, ever. You should stay away. It's like worse than any terrible August day in Manhattan. I mean, it's just, and it's even worse because it's empty.
Yeah. What are your favorite times then?
September and April. Also May.
Okay.
By mid-June, it's getting too hot in Milan.
And do you have favorite dinner spots or cafes that you would recommend?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite cafe is Bar Kuki. And oftentimes tourists go and they're like, what? I don't get it. I mean, a lot of these things that are my favorite because I've developed relationships with the people that own it. And they treat me like family. And I go and I don't mind that the service sucks. And that like, sometimes the cappuccino is good and sometimes it's not. Like, it's just funny the way these things happen. But there's just something really old school about Kuki. And it was the first bar cafe that I ever frequented. And I used to write all of my journalism articles in that cafe. And it was this wonderful mix of people. Like, I always bump into people I know at that cafe. So it's so fun. I mean, it's a mix of like grandpas and toddlers and architects and fashion designers. And then you've got like the oddball where you're like, who is this person? Who cares? Like, it's just, I love Kuki. And it's one of the very few Milanese pasticceria bar cafes that is still in family hands and was opened in 1936. So it's not nearly as beautiful as the original Marchese, but for me, it has more soul. But I do love Marchese and I love Cova. I mean, I love these places that you go to, and Cova is right down the street from our store. So I spend a lot of time there and they all love my dog. This is what's so great about Italy. You can bring your dog anywhere, anywhere. I go to the Prada shop and they give her a bowl of water and a bone when I walk into the Prada store. You know, the other day, the Cova guy came and he was like, do you mind if she's not on the couch? And I was like, oh yeah, sure. It's not our home. Right. I mean, it's like, you could just have your dog on the floor at Cova, not on the couch.
That's so great. Okay. So what about shopping areas other than your fantastic store?
Our store is so fun. Everyone has to go, and be sure if you go to go check out downstairs, because we made this sacred grotta that's dedicated to the Divine Mother. And there are like 5 goddess archetypes down there: Isis, Kuan Yin, Kali, Mother Mary, Green Tara. So it's really fun. It's like unlike any other shopping store. So you have to check that out for sure. I go to the crystal shop. There's a good crystal shop that's right across the street from my friend Huberto's shop, Wait and See. Wait and See is really fun. It's like cheap multi-brand, not cheap as in bad, meaning like not super expensive. You can always find something cute right there. And there's a really good crystal shop across the street that doesn't cost too much. I love Brera. I love just all the little itty bitty storefronts that are there. Via Solferino. I like where I live, which is Pagano. Conciliazione is the zone. It's kind of near the big park and it's quite residential. But then there's like a cute neighborhoody street, Corso Magenta over there. I mean, it's just more... I wouldn't send like a tourist over there for shopping, but it's fun for me to live over there. You know, Milan is kind of different. It's really about shopping for the big brands, and then you'll go for like a couple of really special items. And that's what's great about our store, is that there's no other store like that in the world. I mean, that's our only shop. So it's a destination. I think Huberto's is a destination. I think Paravicini is like a great destination.
That's the amazing custom plates.
Yeah, I love those custom plates. I love Raimondo Garau, who's a friend of mine that has a beautiful antique store, but it's like, it's totally hit or miss. Like sometimes he's got stuff, sometimes he doesn't. Just got to drop in and be like, does he have something? And when he has something, it's like unbelievable. It's fantastic. It's sort of near Corso Como, that shop, Raimondo Garau. You know, can I be totally honest? I don't shop that much anymore. I buy crystals.
Yeah. I've got a spot for you. When you leave Milan and you go outside, there's so many great places that are very near. I mean, you've got Lake Como, you've got Portofino. Where do you go?
Oh, well, of course I go to Lake Como because we just did the pool and bar area of the incredible Passalacqua Hotel. So that's my new home away from home. I was going to Valentina, who's the owner. I was going to her Grand Hotel Tremezzo a lot, which I think is the best hotel in Como. It's expensive. And the villa of Passalacqua is even more expensive. So it's really like a special occasion kind of place. There's only 20 rooms. It's just to die for. Como is magical. It's really interesting. Not that many Milanese people go to Lake Como. There's a real snobism towards Como. They think it's boring. I find it to just be exquisite. There's nothing better than a boat ride to Como. The other thing that, I mean, it's 45 minutes from my doorstep in Milan to get to Passalacqua. I mean, maybe 55 to Passalacqua. It's 45 to get into Chernobyl. Very, very close. And Portofino is super close. And I do go there and I stay in a little cheap hotel that's in the Paraggi Cove. So it's not in Portofino, but it's close enough and I could just walk. And Portofino is just fabulous. I spend a lot of time then, like those are my two go-tos of I need to get out of Milan quickly. And then my favorite sort of like I'm getting on a plane in Italy is Capri, but never in June, July, and August. Like I can't go to Capri anymore in those months because there's just too many people. But I love Capri in May and September. And then for June, July, and August, that's when I do Puglia and Sicily. And my favorite island is Pantelleria. I'm just obsessed with it. But I mean, I'm going to warn you in advance, like there's not nice hotels there. They don't have sand beaches. It's kind of difficult. Like you go there for wild, raw, pure nature, beauty, and energy. It's fantastic. Like if you're having a life crisis, go to Pantelleria. it'll just dust you right up. It's great. It's fantastic. But if you want sort of the more social places, then you can go to Panarea, or you can go to Taormina, or you can go to Palermo. I love Palermo. I love Puglia. Puglia, though, is also one of those places that tourists like start scratching their head because they like start driving and they're like, where am I? Because it's not like Tuscany, which is just like magically manicured everywhere and gorgeous everywhere you look. Again, like Puglia is sort of like a lot about relationships and like knowing where to go and hook up with people. And it's just so magical when you get inside those beautiful masserie.
Now, I have to ask you what your secret to traveling in style is. What pieces do you always keep in your suitcase, or what do you wear on the plane?
Well, it's so funny because at Double J, we're really all about that. There's several pieces in our collection that are travel, not just travel inspired, but like travel perfect. So the swing dress, which was our first key dress, is a no-brainer. It's beautiful and luxurious silk twill, made and printed in Lake Como. And it's a dress that has short sleeves and is A-line to the ground. And you can wear it with tennis shoes on the weekend, or you wear it with high heels and jewels and you're like cocktail or wedding ready. And it folds down to the size of a handkerchief. It's so easy. So I love that. I love set dressing. I would say like the silks in general, our silks travel really well because that silk, especially the silk twill, I don't know. You just fold it and you like shake it out. And it just, so I think the palazzo pants and our boy shirts, having those sets are great. I love traveling with a long cardigan because it goes over jeans. It goes over dresses. We've got one called the Nono cardigan that's in camel and one in black that has trim in another color. I just love that. It always gets chilly. I don't know. Rather than coats, I don't know. I really like these sleek, long cardigans. I travel with bathing suits that can double up as yoga or ready to wear. So both are like long sleeve surf suit, as well as like we have our Cascata bathing suit that has like frills on it. And you can wear that as swimwear, but then you can also put it with a skirt or pants and like it's a bodysuit. And same with a long sleeve surf suit. It's a bodysuit with a skirt. It's great for yoga when I'm working out in the morning, and then I go swimming in it. It's fantastic.
I love that. JJ, this has been such a treat. I cannot wait to see the store.
Oh, you gotta come.
I will be in the store with you shortly. I can't wait. But thank you so much for all of this. This is amazing.
It's my pleasure. Milan has gotten a bad rap for so many years, and I'll never forget all the years when I was a journalist at Harper's Bazaar. And the team would come in from New York and just be complaining from the morning until the night. And like, we can't wait to go to Paris, except they love to have their pasta, of course, in Milan, but they thought it was boring, et cetera. And it's just so nice to see how the city has really awakened and arisen from this great slumber. And it's just great to see so many people moving here and it really becoming this vibrant international, but still small city that's manageable and like lovable and It's just great. I really like it.
I was actually going to ask you, how has the city changed since you've been there for 21 years? What would you say is the, if you could sum up how the city has changed?
Well, now the editors don't complain about it. There's more people coming. It's become a lot more international people have moved here. It used to be just people like me that fell in love with an Italian guy, and those were the only internationals you found here. But now people are living here because of the quality of life, because of Brexit, because of all sorts of things. Like I'm just seeing young creative people, Americans, English people. You know, my friends from Germany just moved here. They moved from Berlin to Milan. And they're like, the first thing they told me, they've been here 2 months, they're like, everyone is so nice here. They're like, Germany was so mean. It was so funny. They're not mean. They don't really mean. They're just more serious. You know, they're kind of more stoic. So I think the biggest change has just been the influx of international people, which is great. The influx of international hotels. Like when I moved here, there was the Four Seasons and the Grand Hotel di Milano and the Principe and the Westin. That was it. Since I've moved here, Bulgari, Giorgio Armani's hotel, Park Hyatt, the Mandarin Oriental, all of these hotels have opened up here. Like, and restaurants have opened up. We've gotten Japanese food. We've gotten Thai food. I mean, do I think the Thai is as good as what I find, or the Asian food is as good as what I find in America? No, but at least they have it. We still don't have a French restaurant in Milan, but I don't think that's ever going to happen because the Italians don't like French food.
No, it's changed a ton. Again, thank you so much. This is super full of information. I'm really excited to share this.
Oh, yay. I'm so happy. Thank you for having me, dear one.
And I hope to see you sooner rather than later.
Me too.
Okay, take care.
Ciao, beauty. Ciao, ciao, ciao. Grazie. Ciao.
To learn more about JJ, check out her website at lajj.com and Instagram at lajj and JJ Martin Milan. Coming up after the break, I'll be talking about destination hacks for Milan.
Listen to new episodes of Passport to Everywhere, Thursdays at noon, 9 a.m. Pacific, on SiriusXM Business Radio, Channel 132. You're listening to Passport to Everywhere. Here's your host, Melissa Biggs Bradley.
To recap tips from our talk and to add some from my most recent visit and from Indigare, I've rounded up hacks to keep in mind when planning a trip to Milan. Just bear with me on my accent because I do not speak Italian. First, try to avoid visiting in midsummer when the city is not only brutally hot, but it is also empty of most of its residents who fled to the sea or to the mountains. Instead, come in fall or spring, when the city buzzes with fashion and design shows like Salone de Mobile, or Salone, as Italians refer to it. The city gets super crowded with design aficionados, but it's also brimming with pop-up design and fashion events. You just have to have booked a place to stay many months in advance. And as always, do your homework before you come. Whether you research Milan's rich design history or read books like Beneath the Scarlet Sky by Mark Sullivan, which is one of my favorites. It's about the city during World War II. Or you get a peek inside stylish homes through the beautiful book that two Milanese friends of mine just released called Inside Milan. You will get to understand the city more if you know more of its background and put it in context. Inside Milan was actually just published by Vendome Press, and it features many of Milan's great creative talents in their houses and apartments. So I highly recommend getting a peek. And as JJ mentioned, you can get inside fabulous house museums. My favorite is the Villa Necchi, which is spelled N-E-C-C-H-I. It has played major scenic roles in movies such as I Am Love and The House of Gucci, both of which are worth watching before you visit Milan. The Villa Necchi is managed by FAI, a kind of Italian national trust, which manages historic houses, and Indigare is proud to support. Other great ones in Milan, which are part of a network of house museums, are the Poldi Pezzoli and Bagatti Valeschi, which, as JJ mentioned, is very close to the Four Seasons Hotel. Some of the special shops that you will only find in Milan are the fashion concept shop Wait and See at 14 Via Santa Marta. Its owner, Uberta Zambaletti, has an amazing eye and design sensibility. So all the fashion editors go there to see her displays and to discover new talent. JJ also mentioned the wonderful ceramic shop, Laboratorio Paravicini, at number 8 Via Nerino. I adore the family behind this brand, and when you visit, you can browse their incredible treasures, but also see the plates being hand-painted in old stables where the workshops are set. Of course, you also have to see the one and only La Double J store on Via Santa Andrea at number 10, and the spectacular boutique of fashion designer Luisa Beccaria. Some of our favorite streets for shopping are Via Solferino, Via Brera, and Corso Garibaldi. JJ also mentioned some of Milan's great coffee houses, like her favorite, Kuki, at 1 Corso Genova, and Cova on Via Montenapoleone. And then there's Marchesi, the historic pastry shop that was bought by the Prada Group. The original location is at Via Santa Maria alla Porta, but there are also new outposts where the interiors as well as the pastries are just gorgeous. One is on Via Montenapoleone. Restaurants that I love and often include on our insider journeys to Milan are Da Giacomo, Da Giacomo Bistro, Latteria San Marco, Il Salamaio, the Armani Cafe, and the Torre restaurant at the Prada Foundation. You can find many more suggestions in our Milan Where to Eat section on Indigare.com. And of course, I have to mention something about an aperitivo, which is a true art form in the city. One of our favorites, especially on a first visit to Milan, is the historical Bar Basso. You could equate it to a Harry's Bar in Venice, and it serves some of the best Negronis I've ever tasted. They're especially famous for their large glasses and their Negroni Spagliato, which legend says was invented here. But you can find many more suggestions in our Milan Where to Eat section on Indigare.com. JJ also mentioned the hotel brands that have come to the city, like Armani, Bulgari, Mandarin Oriental, and Four Seasons. But I also love the historic Principe di Savoia, and I'm excited about some of the new boutique properties, like JK Milano, the Vic Milano, and Portrait Milano from the Ferragamo family, which opens next month. As to traveling outside the city, JJ had lots of suggestions, but one of her favorites is going to Lake Como and the new 20-room hotel opened by our friend, the fabulous Valentina De Santis, called Pasalacqua, where JJ transformed the solarium and lounge area with her joyful, colorful prints. If you go to Como for a night or more, a great excursion is another house museum managed by the Italian National Trust, FI, called Villa del Balbianello, which is on an island in Lake Como. If you really want to get to know Milan by meeting the city's creative residents and going into their workshops and houses, just as I fell in love with Milan, consider joining one of Indigare's specialized insider journeys. This week, I'm hosting one that JJ was part of in Milan. It's one of our Vogue Indigare trips. You can get a glimpse on my Instagram, and we'll be running more Vogue fashion ones to Milan next March and October, as well as one focused on design next fall. So go to indigare.com/insider journeys for details. Huge thank you to JJ Martin for joining us today. To learn more about JJ, check out her website at ladoublej.com and on Instagram at ladoublej and at JJ Martin Milan. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Passport to Everywhere. Next week, our special guest, Shannon Knapp, CEO of Leading Hotels of the World, will join me to discuss how the pandemic changed the hotel world forever and where people want to travel now in our Future of Travel series. And we'll also cover how not to lose a bag on Travel Hacks. Hope you'll join us.
The adventure continues next week. Find more episodes of Passport to Everywhere with Melissa Biggs Bradley streaming now on all podcast platforms.
And anytime on the SXM app.
Follow Melissa on Instagram at Indigare Founder. And for more on Melissa, head to Indigare.com.
Indagare.
Send us your questions about travel. Passport@SiriusXM.com. Or call us at 646-535-7297. This has been Passport to Everywhere.